The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
The people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Don't buy anything based solely on tip or recommendation you hear. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 524. It's the 5th of July, 2016. On the podcast today, Colm Clunan, Finance Director of Tlou Energy, ticker TLOU. In the interest of transparency, I do hold stock in this company. But it's a big rise today, up over 30% as I'm looking right now. And originally, Colm today talks about the 50-megawatt power project approved by the Botswana government. Initially, this was only going to be a 10-megawatt. It's now 50-megawatt. And Colm says there's some big things to come ahead for Tlou. So worth putting on your watch list, but don't take my word for it. Listen to Colm there. Also on the podcast, I have Miles Pelham, chairman of Obtala Resources, OBT, talking about positive change that's happening there over the next 6 months. And today's penny stock with potential suggested by Chris is Ariane Silver, AGQ. I'll read out the reasons for that later. Also today, I'm doing the broker buys and sells.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Colm Clunan, Finance Director of Tlou Energy. That's ticker T-L-O-U. Now, I know about the company, Colm. Thanks for joining me, by the way.
Thanks, Justin. Good to be on again.
Yes, I know about the company. Like, you were on last time. I really like the sound of the company, and I've got to say, for interest of transparency, I do hold a couple of shares. I say couple, it's a bit more than a couple, but it's not a lot more, but I do hold shares in the company. So, I know about the company. Last time you came on, Colm, fair play, you did a very good job, I thought, and I thought, this guy knows his stuff, you know, and he's got some experienced guys on the board with him, and they've done this kind of thing before. But for people, like I say, who don't know about Tlou, can you explain what you're all about there, Colm, please?
Yes, indeed, Justin. As I said, yeah, it's great to be back on again. We are a coal bed methane explorer based in Africa. Now, we're listed on the ASX in Australia, and we're also listed on AIM. So what we do is we extract gas from coal in Africa, and we use that gas. We sell it to whatever off-takers we can get, and to generate power. And we're based in Botswana, Southern Africa, a region with a chronic energy shortage. They're currently importing a huge amount of power from South Africa at a very inflated price. They also have a huge amount of diesel-fired generation in the region. So our aim is to develop a local power source from the gas in Botswana, and use that, first of all, to provide power to Botswana, and thereafter export power in the region. We have quite a large license area, about 8,300 square kilometers. We have contingent resources in place. Contingent resources means that we have gas in the ground. We're currently working on converting those contingent resources to reserves. That means you have gas in the ground that you can get out and sell economically. We're currently flaring gas. We have just been approved a 50 megawatt power project by the Botswana government, which we announced this morning. And we're run by a very experienced team, one of whom is a gentleman by the name of Tony Gilby. And Tony has done all this before and made a lot of money for a lot of shareholders from in particular, one company called Sunshine Gas in Australia. So that's currently where we're at. I suppose we've a market cap of around £8 million, 206 million shares on issue, and we're TOU on ASX and we're TLOU on AIM.
Yeah, well, that's what I liked. You know, first and foremost, I remember last time talking to you and I went through an acronym where essentially I said, tell us about your assets there. And so your resource, how big is the resource there?
Well, it's we have contingent resources booked, and it's 3.3 TCF of 3C contingent resources. And it's hard to quantify a figure like that, but the Arapa Power Station, which is based about 150 kilometers north of our field, that's a 90 megawatt power station. The amount of gas in the ground, or the amount of gas that 3.3 TCF of gas represents, would power that power station for, it's in the region of 400 years. So there's nobody saying you're going to go and do anything of the sort, but it just shows the amount of gas that actually is in the ground. So you can imagine by even converting some of that, even half of that to reserves, is an absolutely phenomenal amount of gas.
Yeah, and also, just to say that Arapa thing, is it one of the biggest in the world, isn't it?
Arapa Power Station is a 90-megawatt power station that provides power to the Arapa Diamond Mine. And the Arapa Diamond Mine one of the biggest, if not the biggest, diamond mine in the world. So, yeah, there's a... And that just is probably getting a little bit ahead here on where we are. But the that actual... power station, the 90-megawatt power station, runs 100% on diesel. And it was originally built to run on diesel and gas with the intention of converting to gas very, very soon after it was built. But that's never happened, and now it's running 100% on diesel at absolutely phenomenal cost to the company.
Yeah, so we can safely say, I mean, you know, we're just saying the potential... or the reserves, the size of them, trying to put them into a figure that people can imagine there. But, like you say, Botswana, they're desperately short of power and also clean power that's not expensive. So I assume they're behind, as we know. Can we go through, in fact, today's RNS? Wasn't it originally going for a 10-megawatt plant? Wasn't that the case?
Yeah, just for those who may not have seen this morning's announcement, we've got approval from the Botswana government for a 50-megawatt power plant in Botswana. Now, this is absolutely massive for the company. We originally had applied for a 10-megawatt project, and to get 50-megawatt project five times what we'd actually looked for is absolutely fabulous for us. It gives us a lot more optionality, particularly in relation to project funding and economies of scale and so on. But the 50 megawatts has come about following an earlier announcement in June, where the Botswana government came out and added coal bed methane power as part of their ongoing forward plan for power generation in the company. Now, that was the first time that they've ever come out and added coal bed methane into the mix for their power gen. Now, at the time, they announced that there was going to be 100 megawatts of coal bed methane power generation. We had applied for 10, expecting at that time that, look, we'd have a very, very good chance of getting that 10 megawatts, but to actually be given 50 megawatts up front so quickly is absolutely phenomenal. So over the last few months, over the last year in more to the point, we really have been focusing on getting our gas flows in place in Botswana and getting an offtake agreement. Now, we've one of those firmly ticked as of today, the offtake agreement, and we're very, very confident on how the gas flows are going as well.
Okay, so you got the planning for the 50, and so, like you said, the next stage is the gas at commercial flow rate. So, you said it's going very well, but when will you know? Do you have a time frame as when you will know you'll be up to speed on this?
There's quite an involved process when you're bringing a coal bed methane well, bringing it on and bringing the gas to flow. It's not a simple case of a bit like, say, maybe conventional oil where you'll just, you know, you can you drill it and your oil will flow, your gas will flow, and so on. With coal bed methane, it takes some time to develop a well. You got to drill the well, then you'll have to monitor pressures in your well formations. You may have lateral wells, vertical wells, water comes from the well as well. There, and then your gas starts to get produced. You have to build the sustainability of that gas and so on. So it's not just an exact look. You drill a well and this is exactly what's going to happen. The basin that we're in Botswana has a lot of similar characteristics to the coal bed methane basins in Queensland. Now, it can be quite similar, but they're never the same. No basin is the same. So something that would have happened in Queensland, for instance, isn't necessarily going to happen in Botswana. So to give an exact time frame as to when commercial gas rates are going to flow is difficult to give. What I can say is we already have got sustained flow rates from our wells. So I'll go into a little bit more detail on the actual wells we're flowing from at the moment. We have three, we call them lateral pods. So there's a presentation on our website and you can actually see the graph of what a lateral pod looks like. There's a vertical well, and that well is intercepted by a lateral well. So you can imagine you've got a vertical well drilled about sort of 400 to 600 meters deep, and then about a kilometer away, you start drilling another well. That well goes down about 400 or 500 meters, turns in the ground, and then drills through the coal seam for 700-800 meters and intersects with the original vertical well that you've drilled. So then you pump from the lateral well in the coal, you pump water and gas out of there. It comes up through the vertical well, and at that point you have your gas flowing and your water flowing from the coals. Over time, the water gets less and less, and the gas increases. And then at that stage, you start to build your sustained gas flow rate. You reach a peak rate, and then your wells will start to tail off over a number of years. Now, that's a whole modeling process that's done by independent reserve certifiers. We're currently in the process of, we've got three wells doing that at the moment. We call them the Salemo wells, Salemo 1, 2, and 4. So they're currently flowing. We have flown sustained gas from Salemo 1 a number of months ago. I think it was late March, early April, around that time. We've flown and sustained gas from Salemo 1. Then since then, Salemo 2 and 4, which are, Salemo 1 is the well in the middle, and one north, one south, we have Salemo 2 and Salemo 4. Since then, we've also flown gas from both of those wells. So we're at a point now where the gas we've flown is from the data we have available, is mainly coming from the vertical section of our wells and not as much from the lateral sections just yet, due to the level of dewatering required to really bring the gas flows from the lateral wells. We're extremely confident that once we get the gas flows from the lateral wells, we'll be at a point where we can provide sufficient data to our reserve certifiers, and it's them that will give us the independently certified reserves, which in reality is the person that will confirm whether or not you have a commercial gas flow. We can always come out and say, yes, we've got rates of X, but you still need your independent person to come and confirm that you have a sustained gas flow at a commercial rate that you can sell to an off-taker. So they're the key items we need to have in place in order to book certified reserves. And certified reserves are effectively a bankable reserve that you can go and get project funding from.
I understand. But like you said, it's hard to actually put a figure on time scale on this. But I mean, are we talking, months or, six months?
We'd be confident that all things going to plan, that we would be able to get reserves booked this quarter.
Okay. Now, like you said, you said the basin is very similar to in Queensland, but it's not the same. But I assume, like you said, one of the letters in that acronym was about the head honchos and, H, that was for, and the management, like you said, they're very experienced. And also just, guys from the country as well, like the executive director, who was formerly of the government there. I'm sure, he knows exactly, who to talk to and how to address this problem of a power shortage, doesn't he?
An executive director based in Botswana. His name is Habake. Habake, we call him Gigi. Now, Gigi is a very well-respected former permanent secretary of the Department of Minerals, Energy and Water Resources. So he's a key person in our negotiations with government. His understanding of how the culture works over there and the ins and outs of dealing with government is second to none. And he He's a very strategic person to have in place. He works very closely with the government, and he does give us that benefit of having that knowledge of the system that otherwise it might be more difficult for non-Botswana people to handle.
Yeah. Okay. Well, it's as yet it all seems to be going to plan, doesn't it? And so eventually, I don't know if you've obviously discussed this, but what is the ultimate ambition here? You know, what's the potential? Because you've got the reserves, potential reserves there. But do you have, a goal in mind, an ideal goal, if everything goes to plan?
Well, look, there's a number of forward plans here. The first one will be the 50 megawatt project. Get that in place. Get the offtake agreement in place with Botswana Power Corp. Just like the figures for a 50 megawatt project, in one sense, people think 50 megawatts is not huge. You go to places like India and they have enormous power stations. But 50 megawatts, in revenue terms, you could easily be talking 50, 60, 70 million US dollars revenue per annum, subject to pricing and so on. Pricing in that has not yet been discussed. But the ability for a project of that to pay itself back in revenue terms are relatively short. Following on from the 50 megawatt project, the Arapa power station that we mentioned earlier, that has its 90 megawatt currently diesel-fired generation. That the minister came out in Botswana at the Botswana Resource Sector Conference in June, and he said that plans are in place to convert the Arapa power station from diesel to gas. Now, we're the only ones with gas there that could possibly do it with local gas right now. So we've already submitted a tender to supply gas to the Arapa power station. Now, once we get a reply on that, we'll obviously update the market. But that's the potential next option post the 50 megawatt project. Further from that, there's a possibility for a 300 megawatt greenfield plant, and after that there's a chance for export. As well as all of that, there are a number of other smaller miners in the region who are using diesel-fired power who would be quite happy to take some gas-fired power for their generation too. So there are endless opportunities here.
Yeah, we can see it. Like you say, you are marking up sub 10 million. And so you can see, just extrapolating the revenue from that, like you say, even minimum sort of 50 million US, like I said, the potential upside is great there. And I think, if it all goes to plan, like it seems to be going at the moment. Well, marvellous, Colin. Listen, if anyone needs any more convincing, for me, like I said, I'm in there, I'm a shareholder. So when I first spoke to you, I thought, there's potential here. You've got the management, you've got the asset, and you've got a ready-made market there. So I can see the potential there. But, for people who need further convincing, Colin, can you give us three reasons why anyone should add Tulu Energy to their Vox Markets watch list?
Well, the first one, I think, and I'm going to say this, I'm the finance director, I think we're undervalued. There's some broker research out there that has it valued at significantly more than our current share price. So that's one reason. We have a number of key milestones that will be coming up in the near term. We'll be getting our initial reserves. This is subject to, of course. Initial reserves. We have a number of partners that we're speaking to for project funding. We convert our current licenses to a mining license. We've got EIA approvals to come. We'll be expanding our reserves. Look, we're very close to some potentially game-changing events, and we know we've got bigger power gen firms actually watching this, and we are the most advanced player in a market with a huge energy shortage, and we have a supportive government behind us. So, look, I think everything's in place. There's a lot of potential upside. Yes, there's a lot of work. We're looking forward to it. But there's definitely potential here.
Yeah, exactly. Colin, lovely to speak to you. And listen, hopefully we'll speak again soon and you'll have some more good news for us.
Thanks, Justin. I'm I'm sure we can have a chat again very soon.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Wade.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Miles Pelham, chairman of Obtala Resources. That's OBT ticker. Current share price is 8.13p. Market cap around 21.4 million. You're right, Miles. Thanks for coming on, fella.
Very good, mate. Nice to speak to you.
Now, listen, I know a bit about Obtala, been doing a bit of research there, but for people who've not heard of Obtala, what are you all about there, Miles?
Okay, we are an African-focused agriculture and forestry play listed on AIM. As you said, the current market cap is just below $30 million. We were listed in 2008 as a mining incubator. Have since shed those mining assets and are solely focused on two major asset streams now, which is that of agriculture and forestry. Our agriculture assets are based in Tanzania. We have around 1,800 hectares under management, of which 100 hectares are irrigated. We've been in production for 2 or 3 years now, but lack the necessary accreditation in which to export our goods and therefore scale our business and try and grow revenues. We received that accreditation last November, and that meant that the floodgates opened to us to start to export, and we signed an agreement with CMF, based in Monaco. And since then have been working towards fulfilling orders. Our forestry assets are based in Mozambique. We have around 314,000 hectares of natural virgin forest. It's full of exotic hardwoods, around 10 to 15 species. The problem here, well, not the problem, is we've been operational for 2 or 3 years. The problem with scaling revenues is that we lacked the route to market, which all changed in February when we signed a joint venture with Basic Materials. We now have significant demand for our products. So we've got significant demand, significant supply, and we just need to take care of the bit in the middle, which means scaling capacity quite significantly. For that, we needed investment, but we've received around $3.5 million of investment to date. If you look at the last investment rate, that put a valuation on the asset of around or just over $110 million. We also had an independent valuation done on the forestry assets, which put the assets around $161 million using the 12% discount rate. Trading at a fair discount to assets, as a lot of AIM companies are, but we are starting to monetize those assets. So we're at a stage now where we should see a ramp up in production, and hopefully that will mean that a decent ramp up in revenues. So there's been a lot of change over the last 6 months, which may mean that the investors should take another look at Obtala. I've been on the board since last August. I'm a shareholder myself, and I've been chairman for just over a couple of months now. You'll see from the announcements last week that we've announced a new board member's joining, which gives new impetus for us to start increasing shareholder value.
Okay, all right. So essentially, it's a business of two parts, isn't it? So it's the forestry and the food. Is that right?
Correct. We do also have a non-core business that is Lesotho Real Retail. Chain, so that should be added on the end. But that's in a position now where it should make or lose $100,000, which I would say is not a real focus for management presently.
Yeah, well, just looking, I'm just a quick highlight for people who have not looked at your final results. Revenues increased by 118% to 3.7 million. Net assets 81.7 million, like you said. So your recent full results there show you are still, in the midst of change. So, over the next 6 to 12 months there, what can we expect there, Miles?
Like you say, and I'll just explain, we are in the process of a lot of change. And having looked at the recent announcements, I'm sure you'll see them coming thick and fast. I would say that there will be continued change, maybe a less pace than what has been in the last 6 months. But we're at a point of increasing production and hopefully revenue expansion with the forestry. We have a decent order book. We have the platform built, and the next 6 months are all about getting orders away and then building the momentum to scale up production. With the Agri, we have a new farmer on board, whereas we were looking at five different crops to grow under the last management. Now we're looking at 100 different crops and really doing a detailed assessment of. We've got extremely fertile land. We've sunk around $10 million into getting the agricultural assets to a point of decent production, and now we need to. Now I think we need to do a decent deep dive to work out what is the best thing to plant, where are the most profitable places to sell it, and make sure we get that right. So that's occurring at the moment, but in the meantime we're still planting and we'll continue to try and grow revenues organically. With Lesotho, Lesotho retail chain, we're still in discussions with parties. As I said before, this is a non-core asset. It may stay on the books or it may not, but I expect further developments in the coming weeks and months on that point.
Yeah. Well, do you know what? I've just been looking at some of the RNS releases today, and we're seeing more and more companies talk about Brexit, and it's all over the place here now in the UK, and companies are mentioning it, especially house builders and stuff like that. Have you been affected in any way whatsoever by Brexit, or will you be?
In a very small way, I'd say, and actually, I'd say it has a net positive impact on us. We only have costs in the UK, albeit a small part, but our Nomad is there, our broker is there, our PR company. Obviously, we've got a small office there and a couple of staff in England. So it's so the fact that the pound has depreciated means that our costs are less. We've got our listing in the UK, but I would say the British exit won't affect that. I think the LSE is still best in class, and so I don't imagine there'll be significant change there in the short term, even due to the Brexit. But the movement in sterling means that we're a company with almost 100% of our revenues in dollars. So our dollars go a little bit further in the UK, and since our stock price is denominated in sterling, it means should we ever deem it appropriate that we should be able to turn our dollar revenues into more stock. So I'd say overall, although we don't like the sentiment that's happened because of the Brexit, the immediate impact is one of benefit.
Yeah, okay. And, there's been recent sort of turmoil in Mozambique as regard debt problems there. Are you affected by this in any way?
This would definitely have a larger impact on us than the British exit, for sure. But, again, presently, the short-term impact is only positive. We're investing an awful lot in increasing our production capacity in Mozambique and the forestry assets in particular. That means that there's been severe depreciation in the Mozambique metal, which means that our US dollar goes a lot further when you're building new drying sheds and buying bits and bobs. We're buying our tractors locally, which are costing much less. We're affected a little bit by the rand as well, because a lot of our machinery comes from South Africa. So that's only been of benefit since we're investing, and we get paid in US dollars. So the depreciation doesn't really impact us that much, only to reduce our costs. With Mozambique falling further into turmoil, let's say, I think that's overstated, but let's just call it that. There's a lot of talk about Remeco and the tensions between the opposition and the leading party, but we've seen absolutely zero impact from that historically, and there's no indications from the guys on the ground that it's affecting us at all. It does affect some main trunk roads going down to Maputo, but we transport our wood directly to the port, which is due east. So we've had no impact really. Okay. Clearly, a deteriorating country is not good from that perspective. But we're hoping that Mozambique given the fact that it's got the sixth youngest population in the world and the fact that it's grown 7% a year, that debt, although it's 83% of GDP, it's you could argue that it's in a much better position than the likes of Italy with 130% in GDP with no growth and, you know, the sixth oldest population in the world. But,
Well, I mean, looking at the markets today, and I've seen some headlines today, the Italian banks are taking an absolute hammering today. So, anyway, let's move on to a bit more news. Can you give us more details on the 29th of June? You announced a new CEO there. Can you give us a bit of background as to that, please?
Sure. There were enhancements, I think, needed to the board, solely because the last board had great vision and put us in a place where we had some fantastic efforts to exploit. But we're at the point of exploiting them, and as we transition into production and revenue generation, we need a real focus on operational excellence. The two new additions of Paul Dolan and Warren Dietz are extremely high caliber individuals whom I'm very confident will oversee the expansion of our production capability with making sure that our execution risk is really kept to a minimum. So very, very strong new joiners to the team.
Marvellous. All right, then. Well, listen, Miles, if anyone needs any more convincing to add you to their Vox Markets watch list, could you break it down into three bullet points, please?
Optala, I think, represents a company that is in a very attractive sector of agriculture and forestry, certainly with decent prospects for good profitability. I think as a second point, you could say that we're in the right postcode. We're in a continent that is set for growth in the 21st century, and you could argue on some predictions that we could fulfill all of our demand within country without having to export within the next 5 to 10 years. So I certainly feel that we're in the right place at just the right time. And thirdly, and most importantly, we're at a stage of our development where we're no longer a Jan tomorrow company. We're starting to generate revenues and we're starting to increase production, and I hope that it'll be Jan this year.
Marvellous. Well, let's hope so. Miles, lovely to talk to you, and if I've now hit follow on Vox Markets, what's the sort of next bit of news I can expect to hear about?
Hopefully we'll be updating in the next couple of months about our first export orders leaving. We are preparing orders in the forestry business, so the wood's just sitting there drying now, and we're due to start harvesting in August for new crops on the fresh produce.
Excellent. Miles, listen, I look forward to talking to you again in the near future.
Great. Thanks, Justin.
Okay, today's penny stock with potential, as suggested by Chris Hodgson, is Ariane Silver, AGQ. What does the company do? A gold and silver exploration with near-term plan to move into production. How many shares does the company have in issue? 183 million. Current price and market cap, it's 0.95, market cap 1.75. How much cash or debt does the company have? No debt. Cash position between 1 and 1.5 million. Quite a lot for that market cap. It lists three reasons why you think this company has potential. It's cheapest gold and silver company on AIM with cash, no debt, and own assets. Number two, announced very near-term producing asset acquisitions in Mexico imminently. And number three, likely gold, silver will continue to appreciate in a risk-off market environment. Very true. And I pointed that out in the five things you should know before the market opens. Silver hitting two-year highs. And there's a lot of risk off here, going for safe assets. So that's AGQ, suggested by Chris Hodgson. By all means, put them on your watch list. Now, broker buys and sells. Here we go. You're the sales today. Peel Hunt has upgraded moneysupermarket.com to buy. Price target, £3.40. Liberum Capital has upgraded Supergroup to buy. Price target, 15 quid. Here are the sales. Liberum Capital has downgraded Pets at Home to sell, price target £2, and they've also downgraded Poundland Group to sell, price target £1.25. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Much appreciate.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
The people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Don't buy anything based solely on tip or recommendation you hear. Please do your own research.